only hurt his MCL. Hey, if you're listening right now, you should call on, especially if you're a Celtics fan. We want to talk Celtics with you. We want to hear your opinions. Is Joe Mazzulla a legitimate coach? Or is he heavily reliant on the swarms of talent that have been constructed around him? Is Jason Tatum a legitimate superstar? I would say yes, but maybe he isn't. Maybe you, as a Celtics fan, are a skeptic and you think he's a choker. We want to hear it. Call in at... God, you're not going to remember the number even if I say it. Just look it up on the internet. WMFO.org. 855-915-9636. I'm going to repeat. 855-915-9636. But this is Airball. We're talking ball right now on the air. Owen. It's just me and Owen today. It's the homie. He knows ball at a certain level. At a very deep level. Introduce yourself.
I'm Owen. Happy Earth Day. Chag Sameach to all the Passover celebrators out there. It's a big day. Big day in the NBA. We got Magic, Cavs. Cleveland's up 1-0 in that series. Knicks obviously up 1-0 against the Sixers. And what I think is looking like it could be one of the better or best series that we're going to have this round, in my opinion. And then, of course, Lakers-Nuggets prime time, 10 p.m. Eastern time, for all the East Coasters out here. I say we start, recap what we saw last night. Joan and I were just talking about that Pelicans-Thunder series. Obviously, that was a close game the whole way through, and then a clutch block from Chet at the end, kind of just to seal the deal. It is a Pelicans team without Zion Williamson, who's clearly their force on the offensive end. We saw it in the play-in. We saw it the whole season when he's healthy, and they're just a completely different team when he's in there. Do you think it's sustainable to play like this without Zion against a team like the Thunder?
I think it is sustainable. In the sense that the Thunder, it's sustainable in the short term in this series.
Yeah.
But I think they can take them to six without Zion, but they have no chance of beating them. And that's the sad reality. I think with Zion, it changes the whole dynamic. Because you've got a weak rookie center who, despite being talented, has not put on the muscle needed to stop a guy like Zion. There's maybe three defenders in the league that can even slow Zion.
I think Zion would average like 35 in this series.
He would be a real matchup problem for that Thunder team. And it's disappointing to me, deeply disappointing, that he's out.
Yeah, wait, let's go on. I mean, yesterday we were actually filming a movie here at school, and we were watching the Clippers game, at least just following the reports, and it came out that Kawhi was going to be missing that game. Jonah had a certain reaction to that. Jonah was irate, to say the least. Jonah?
Yeah. I find that I look at the rosters, I look at the playoff matchups every year. I'm going to refrain from swearing because this is a thing I get passionate about. Every year, we've got beautiful matchups up and down both conferences. We see, this year we've got a beautiful matchup like the Clippers versus Mavericks. A matchup storied, a matchup where there's legitimate emotions and rivalry and narratives baked into the matchup. And I find that every year, we just get tainted by injuries. And I know, sports science has come a long way. Player longevity is, by all metrics, improving. But at the same time, every year, April hits, and suddenly you get all the stars dropping down with injuries. You get Jimmy Butler getting injured in a play-in game. You get Zion Williamson getting injured in a play-in game. Gets Giannis getting injured a week before the playoffs. Get Kawhi dealing with things they hasn't dealt with the whole season. It seems to me that when you hit that 70-game mark, the body starts to break down, and then you couple that with the increased intensity of playing in the playoffs, and it's just you're creating a perfect situation for a bunch of unfortunate injuries that really just delegitimize a lot of the series that you have. I know it's part of the game. I'm not one to call Mickey Mouse rings. You know, I don't like questioning someone's path to the title. But there is a very real cheapening that happens when a team gets a free coast through the playoffs by no fault of their own. I mean, what's a good example of that? I mean, people talk with the Suns that one
people
year.
People talk with the Warriors 2022 with the no Jamal Murray, no Ja Morant. And it kind of takes away the credit from a team that deserves to win a ring. Every year, the team that wins a ring got hot, was good in the regular season, and knew how to win in a postseason scenario. I think obviously there is some luck. It takes extreme luck to win an NBA championship. Mm-hmm. It's not pure domination. I mean, there's very few times that we've seen pure domination through the entire course of the season, but it takes some luck along the way, even if you are dominating.
Yep.
And part of that luck is someone being injured, but it doesn't take away the talent of a team. You know, you're dealing with the, especially in the conference final and NBA final, you're dealing with the two best teams in the NBA at that exact moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's luck, but injuries are part of it. These teams are deep. They learn to deal. They're the best coached teams in the world. Doesn't take anything away from a ring to be facing a team that's injury ridden. It just takes away from the viewing experience, I think.
Yeah, and it just allows people who have narratives to push them even further. It's just a disservice to the sport at this point when too many star players are injured. I mean, it's just the reality of it. I don't know if it'll ever change, but it, regardless of like talking about like changing the length of the season or the playing incentives to make people want to play a certain level or a certain like intensity to prohibit them from getting injured, I just find it to be a tragic fact of the sport that really bums me out. It's a sad reminder every year that the beauty of the sport, we shouldn't take it for granted. These players' health, we shouldn't take it for granted. And it makes me very thankful when we do happen to get a playoffs or even a series that isn't tainted by injuries. Because it seems like it's about the norm that there's going to be some asterisk that you can slip in there. It also makes me happy when the team that's disadvantaged by injuries wins despite that. That happened twice last night. You got the Mavericks losing to the Clippers, who were down Kawhi. Clippers had a big statement win on their home court. They needed that win. I think we can go around the horn. Let's start there. You want to talk? The Mavericks have come into this series with a bit of a chip on their shoulders against this Clippers team. What do you think about that?
The Mavericks were hot, especially after that Daniel Gafford trade. They looked good. I think Daniel Gafford kind of got played out of the game last night. And yeah, sure, the Mavericks brought it back a little bit in the fourth, but I don't know. That Mavericks team could not hit a bucket. I don't think that's going to be replicated at all. To be honest, it looked like a different Mavericks team than we had seen the last half of the season. You got three players scoring in double digits, and it's not sustainable to have 64 points coming from Kyrie and Doncic every night and from nowhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But the Clippers were my pick mid-season. Do they... I don't know. I have to think about that, actually. But they proved that they can play without Kawhi, which I think a lot of people were questioning, as you're saying. And they, like, I don't know. There's just a next man up. Like, it's corny to say it, but there's a next man up in mentality in this Clippers team that I don't think we have seen in a Clippers team before. It makes them a lot more scary and a lot more prepared looking than I think we'd seen in the past. Obviously, you got Amir Coffey as your sixth man. That's huge. Norman Powell off the bench. Terrence Mann off the bench. This team is deep.
Mm-hmm.
And they look deep. They play like they're an NBA Finals-ready team. It's just a question of the Nuggets. But I think they proved that they don't need to rely on Kawhi.
Yeah.
Yes, there's some help with the Mavericks shooting. But I think part of that is the Clippers' defense. And just add Kawhi to that. It's looking even better.
It's a good thing to see real contributions coming from the second unit.
Yeah.
Coming from Westbrook, who...
He had a great game.
Great game. You can see the passion that he plays with. You can see that he feels unburdened, in a sense, by playing with these guys. By playing with Harden. I wasn't the biggest fan of the Harden trade when it happened, but I think from the Clippers' perspective, it's an unequivocal success. And it's good to see him thriving with the ball in his hands. The expectations aren't as high as they were. He's at home, you know. I think it's a kind of storybook team built of people from Southern California,
mm-hmm.
for a franchise that hasn't won as much as they would have liked to. They've made the conference finals. You can't hold that over their head anymore. They're not the sorriest team in the league anymore. They've got good ownership, but they've got a lot to prove, and I think everyone on this team has a lot to prove. Maybe Kawhi the least amount, but even he has a good amount to prove when it comes to... He's been the type of player that comes around, like, great player. He's never been truly loyal to a team, and I think he wants to deliver to a team that he cares about. I think the Clippers do that. PG is the same way. He's ringless.
Yeah.
Harden ringless. Westbrook ringless. It's a storybook thing, and I hope that they pull it through.
Plumlee? Plumlee ringless?
Plumlee ringless. Literally everyone on this team ringless, except for... Wait, no, it's Plumlee?
Plumlee may have gotten one last year.
Did he win? He was on the Nuggets last year.
Yeah.
Plumlee's not... Plumlee's they got some championship DNA
they
on this
do
team.
Have some That's DNA. There you go. There you go. That's why they brought in Plumlee.
Yeah.
For that playoff NBA Finals experience.
Tyronn Lue, championship DNA.
Yeah. Dude, this team's good. Like, I think what I took away most from this game is Russell Westbrook's the X factor. If he's dropping 10 plus points a game and he's doing his Russ on the boards, Russ assists, and he's not pissing away the ball, and he's playing that defense, that team is built to last, and they're built to go far as well. I think if there's any team in the West that matches up with the Nuggets, I mean, I don't know, nobody matches up with the two men of Jokic and AG, but the Clippers, I think, can play a part in that.
Okay. Let's move to a new series. Let's talk Lakers Nuggets for a brief moment.
Yeah, we had a good conversation about this yesterday.
Yeah, we were
talking about that Aaron Gordon Jokic two man action where they chucked the lob to AG just trailing. Obviously the Jamal Murray Nikola Jokic pick and roll. Just how unguardable it is, and we've seen it being unguardable for the last. What, 2 or 3 years now, and you would hope that the league could adjust, but it's just a testament to how overpowered that action is, because it's been a few years now and there's no answer for it. And Jokic yesterday looked like the best basketball player in the league two days ago, I guess.
I mean, he just has a type of efficiency and control over the game that's unrivaled right now.
Yeah.
Even a guy... Maybe 10 years ago, LeBron had that same level of control. Not even 10 years ago, 5 years ago, he had that control. LeBron has descended from this Avengers type, this Thanos level guy that can use his Infinity Stones to warp the game to his will. He's a bit more mortal now, and you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
He'll come out in the first quarter with the same type of energy that he used to have. By the end of the game, he's picking spots. He can't always go for that chase down block like he used to. He still can do it when he wants to, but like you could see it. There is a level of understanding that this is a war, not a battle.
Mm-hmm.
And he accepted that in the fourth quarter. Whereas a young LeBron probably would have tried to win that game and snatch it from the Nuggets. Current LeBron is realistic with what he's capable of doing. He saw that his team wasn't hitting the shots. D'Lo was having a terrible game. AD was playing well. Reeves was non-existent. I don't know where he went.
Yeah.
Taurean Prince was fine. Like, every role player wasn't clicking.
Yeah.
LeBron knows that if the team isn't clicking, they can't beat the Nuggets. So he wasn't going to expend that energy for that game.
No. Didn't look it. I saw a quote yesterday from George Karl on Twitter. I don't know if the audience is familiar with George Karl. Hall of Fame coach. Played in the NBA for a very brief stint, but just... stayed as a coach for almost 30, 40 years. Was abroad, but a lot of time in the NBA. This guy knows the NBA. Was one coach of the year, four-time All-Star Game coach. You get it. This guy's Hall of Fame coach. He tweeted last night, or two nights ago after that game. He said, "I've been around for hoops. I've been around hoops for 50 years, and I've seen a lot of incredible players. But at this point, I'm thinking Jokic may be the best player I've ever seen play basketball." That's coming from a Hall of Fame NBA coach. That's insane. I mean, in terms of, like, praise you can give to a player and for someone to give it, getting that from George Karl is pretty validating. I don't know if I would go as far to say as he's the best player I've ever seen play basketball, but I think we're witnessing a one-man domination of the league where he's just making it look so easy. And I think we know this. We've said it for a while, but I just felt it was important quoting that George Karl, because that's high praise.
I mean, he has his own agendas to push, bro. Like, I'm not gonna look at him. Like,
of course.
When I see any dude related to Michael Jordan talking negatively about Michael Jordan, I'm like, dude, you lost to that guy in the finals.
Yeah.
This makes you no better than Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah.
Like, if you're ever, you can't talk badly about Michael Jordan even indirectly.
No.
And he knows exactly what he's doing.
No, I mean, this is a guy who spent 8 years with the Nuggets.
He has agendas.
Keep that in mind. Yeah. But still.
Still a legitimate compliment, and I think that there's merit to it. I think he's one of the most impactful, probably the, offensively, he might be the most impactful player of all time on that end.
Yeah.
Not defensively, though, and I'm not going to entertain any discussion of Jokic being the GOAT. That's just not realistic.
There's a lot of guys, a lot of other centers in the league who could probably stop Jokic. I don't know about, that's a good question. That offense, is there a team that could stop that offense?
I think that the Lakers, the Lakers are very well matched to them.
Yeah.
But I think if you look historically, there's teams that could definitely do a number on that two-man
definitely.
Game.
Definitely.
But, like, you have to really nitpick it. I think the Celtics could stop them. They could put a wrench into that.
Oh, I hope
we'll
not,
have to see, though. I think you have to really think hypothetically. It's like, what happens if you combine, like, a prime Ben Simmons with a future Wembanyama? Maybe that team could
I wish we could just, like, conjure up a scenario and the NBA would just pop it in. Looks like we're getting a caller.
Hello, hello, hello. Can you hear me?
Do not fear.
Is this?
I'm here to answer all of your questions.
Oh, my God. Owen, for context, this dude does not know anything about basketball, but he's an interesting guy.
Based out of Connecticut. I'm an esteemed sports journalist based out of Connecticut. I work for ESPN out here.
Yeah.
Wow.
What's going on?
Yeah. Liam, did you watch any of the games this weekend?
Yeah, all of them.
Well, which one stood out to you the most?
I will say that the Celtics game, wow.
Simply wow.
What a game.
Yeah, Liam, I know you're a big fan of Derek White. What can you say about his impact on and off the court?
I heard what's-his-face retired.
What?
The basketball player.
The basketball player. Maybe we're talking about Rondo. He used to play for the Celtics. He did just retire.
Maybe referring to MJ.
He might just be referring to MJ. Yeah, he retired from the game of poker. He's played it for a long time.
Are you explaining all of this to me? I know this.
Yeah, I know. Anyways, you want to leave a bit of parting wisdom before I remove you from the radio?
Remove.
I abhor how I am being silenced on air. I think that freedom country is declining precipitously. I think it's disgusting what you guys are doing to me. Frankly, I think you guys should be removed off the air if any FCC officials are listening to this. And I think if I had to say one thing before, in theory, I was removed. If this is, in fact, a police state, as it is,
you will be removed.
I think that you always pass the ball. Always pass the ball.
Got to pass the ball.
Yeah, I like that.
Always pass the ball, and I live by that.
Keep the rock moving.
All right, I'm going to move the rock off of the air. See you later, Liam. Yeah, no, that's just my friend. He knows lots of ball.
If you want to call in, number is 855-915-9636. We're taking callers, always. We'd love to hear what you have to say about the league. And especially what you think about Embiid's health. And if they're... Does what they're doing count as medical malpractice? Because...
That's a question.
Embiid looks like he's on like 30% health right now. But he's powering through. Saw that screenshot, that photo the other night of his knee with a brace under the leg, but also blood coming out of his knee. This guy is playing through everything. And he's still hooping, as Embiid always has. it's a shame that Embiid's been injury ridden his whole career, because this dude is a monster when he's healthy, and he's an MVP candidate every year when he's healthy. For all we know, he would have won MVP this year had he stayed healthy. Actually, that's a question. But
dude, the idea of the Sixers medical staff being incompetent is one that's been floated around through basketball circles for a long time. You look at something like the Markelle Fultz situation. You look at the Ben Simmons injuries, the Embiid injuries. There's been so many, the James Harden injury last year. Like, they like to play their players past their breaking point. And it just, I'm not going to accuse them of being bad at their jobs, but I don't see these types of situations arising in competent organizations. Maybe I'm preaching to the choir here a little bit in Boston, but Sixers. If I'm a Philly sports fan, I'm mad at my own medical staff. I'll just put it that way. But we have Sixers Knicks. What do you make of that series?
This is tough. Because I do like this Knicks team. I like Josh Hart a lot. It's a fun Knicks team. And they look good when they're playing tough and they're playing hard. They look good. Jalen Brunson, obviously, can't say enough about him. I just think that they need to pick up. They have to win tonight, and they have to pick up one in Philly. The longer this series goes on, the more confident Philly's going to get. I think the Knicks need to close this out quick, because once Philly gets going and Embiid gets going, I don't think that this Knicks team has what it takes to take the Sixers down in seven.
You're saying that you think the Sixers are going to win this series?
I think the Sixers will win this series if it goes. Yeah. I think if the Sixers win tonight, I would go far enough to say that the Sixers will win the series.
Yeah.
I just think that the Knicks are pretty momentum reliant.
The Knicks won game one, though, which was a huge stand on home court. The Knicks winning tonight would be huge for them.
I just think, it sucks that this Knicks team had to face this team in the first round. I think if Embiid is back and healthy, and they don't win, and Knicks don't win tonight, I think that the Sixers will go on to win the series. I just think this Knicks team is so momentum reliant. I think that's partially because of MSG and the Knicks fan base is making me feel like when the Knicks lose, the Knicks lose hard, and the Knicks win big. It's just, can they come back after a loss and beat this 6-15-7? I don't know. Maxey looks unreal, though. Also, this the fact they have Embiid back changes it all. Like, they lost 9 games with Embiid this year. That's including the one the other night. 9 games. This team ended the season 47-35.
Yeah.
And that's ridiculous. 26 of those losses, 25 of those losses came from when Embiid wasn't playing, I guess.
You know, I'm going to push back on all that. I don't think that the Sixers can win this series, not with Embiid in the position that he's in.
Yeah.
I think the Sixers, Maxey looks incredible. Tobias Harris looks like a dunce. I just don't see it. I mean, Batum is playing out of his mind. I think their role players are all clicking, but if the big guy isn't at his peak form, the Knicks team is too formidable. I think you can't count on another stinker from Jalen Brunson like you got the last time.
No.
I think that the Knicks played an uncharacteristically bad game, and I'll attribute that to playoff nerves. I will do that. I think that's a real thing, and I think that it changes a lot in game two. They play more their normal game. I think the Knicks are too aggressive of a team to fall to an unhealthy Sixers team.
Where was Buddy Hield?
He was just running in circles, to be honest.
I think this is why I'm saying if the Sixers pick up steam, if the Sixers take this to 6 or 7, it just shows to me that the Sixers have figured out their offense versus the Knicks. They figured out how to defend the Knicks offense. And it just shows to me that they've grown into the series. And I think that's when the Sixers adjust, I think that's when the Knicks are done. That's why I think the Knicks have to win tonight. They have to get this series over quick.
Got to defend their home court.
Yeah.
Going into that Philly building is not pretty. I do also think, though, oh my God, we got a caller. Yo, what's good? Can you hear me? Hello, who's this?
Hello? Well, this is Charlie McBurney.
Well, Charlie, welcome to the show.
Chuck, what's on? What's happening?
Hello, lads. Cheers, lads. How we doing?
You know, we're doing good. You a big basketball fan? Which team you got coming out of the East? We're talking about the Knicks.
Oh, talking about the East now. Well, I've been a basketball fan since 1967. Frankly, don't know what I was thinking. But I think right now my favorite team is the Supersonics. The Thunder now. The Thunder.
Yeah, the Thunder. They changed their name. They relocated. Wait. So you're a Thunder fan?
Yes, I'm fascinated with Jalen Williams and Kenrich Williams,
Kazem Wallace, Josh Giddey. Oh, maybe I shouldn't have. Not on the airwaves. Anyways,
What happened with Josh?
I think that they criticize him for being a lackluster playmaker, lacking offensive versatility, and a consistent outside game. Some might say he is not a three-level scorer. He is not a scorer whatsoever. His playmaking is average. I'll leave it at that. Those are the main criticisms of Josh Giddey.
He only had 2 points last game. Can't curse on the show, no.
You can't unfortunately curse on the show. Where are you from, Chuck? What brings you about?
Sorry about that. I'm living in Somerville, but
take your time.
I've got throat problems, as my son says. There's only a few more matches left. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I was born in Sheffield.
Wait, you're born where? Sorry.
Sheffield.
Born in Sheffield, yes.
Of course. Well, you're a Thunder fan. What did you think of the game last night? What were the main takeaways?
Well, this man, Sean Gillis Alexander. Wow. What a guy. Sean Gillis. Oh my goodness.
Yes, Sean Gillis Alexander. Yeah, he does sound like someone from Sheffield.
That's his name, right? Sean Gillis.
Shaw. Right? Yes, yeah. Shaw. It's not Shaw.
Shaw.
Sean Gillis Alexander. He sounds like he could be an aristocrat, to be honest. Okay, but yeah, what do you say about...
Absolutely magnificent player. Absolutely incredible. He reminds me, he moves at the beautiful smoothness of Darren Bent back in the 2000s. He's an absolute player, that man is. Wow.
What do you make of the way he dresses?
I don't know. I don't really pay attention to the off-the-court stuff, but he... the way that man performs on the basketball court... He could marry three of my grandchildren if he wants to. I mean, wow. I would happily accept his dowry.
You know, the Darren Bent comparison is pretty interesting. I don't mind that, actually.
Maybe more like a Dennis Bergkamp. One of those,
yeah.
You know,
yeah, yeah.
Center forwards who...
Maybe a
blistering pace.
A Thomas Suchek, if you may.
Wait, did I hear you correctly? You said you'd let Shay date three of your grandchildren?
Well, to put it that way, it sounds a little crazy. Well, I'd say he's a definite. He meets the requirements for a suitor. You know what I mean?
I like that.
The requirements for a suitor.
Josh Giddey may not meet requirements for a suitor.
No. We don't need to go there. I mean, I think he...
What is the thing with this Giddey guy? I'm not filled in. What is the thing with this Giddey man?
He had some off the court issues.
We'll put it that way. The issues.
Yeah.
Some off the court. Is he a murderer? Is he a murderer?
Ugh,
not quite.
Is he MJ?
He's
MJ.
Not a murderer. You want to talk about one more game with us? Keep you around for the...
Sorry. All right, I don't know if I can do another game.
another game. All right, Chuck, call on another time. We love to have you. You're a great addition to the show.
Shout out Sheffield.
Shout out Sheffield. Shout out your... I'll leave you. Have a good one, man.
All right, cheers, chaps.
Cheers, chap. You know, I love getting locals from the community onto the show. That's really...
First time we've gotten a caller from Sheffield. Huh.
From Sheffield United.
Huh.
Let's keep going. Huh. What other games were there? Which ones haven't we talked about properly?
The Cavs series, but the Cavs series...
I don't want to talk about that. Pacers-Bucks is a good one. Let's talk about Damian Lillard.
Yeah.
Having a resurgence.
That was sick.
Looking like Dame of yesteryear. Looking like pre-divorce Dame. And looking like Dame... With a watch back on his wrist.
If I like that. If Giannis is back in this team and Dame is shooting like that, and this offense is looking like that, then you have a team that looks like they could take down the Celtics in a conference finals series. Halliburton.
Hmm. Something Chuck said. Not Sheffield Chuck. Like Chuck Charles Barkley.
Yeah,
he was like, yeah, they're just rushing the way that they're playing, they're trying to shoot themselves out of a slump, but it isn't working. And for a team like the Pacers, that's just how they play. They play quick. They play in transition. They play with large 3-point volume.
Was this a surprise?
To me, it was. Yeah.
You think? Okay. I thought that earlier in this year, I had listened to, it must have been a podcast or some sort of radio or something. Whoever's hosting, probably was JJ Redick, was saying that this Pacers team is perfect for the regular season. They're a regular season team. In-game adjustments, great. They're just fast-paced offense, high-volume threes, just a fun team. However, you put them in a 7-game series, and a team that's as elite as the Bucks, as elite as the Celtics, is going to make them look silly. In terms of just outclassing them. I think this could be 4. And it could be 4 or 5. I just think that the Pacers are... I agree with the take that they're... In a 7-game series, they're just not there yet. Super reliant on the 3. Siakam had an incredible game. That was... I didn't know if he had that in him. Clearly he does. That was ridiculous. But I just think the Bucks are a playoff team. They're so experienced too.
Mm-hmm.
Malik Beasley looked decent. This team just looks deep, and you can if you look at them on paper, just credentials, everything. The Bucks team just looks like they should be sweeping them in 4.
Okay, but the thing that there's a tension.
Where's your confidence in the Pacers coming from? I'm interested.
Okay. I know that they play like a regular season team.
Mm-hmm.
They play with high pace. They play a way that's unsuited to playoff basketball. I think a lot of people said
that. It's fun basketball.
Fun basketball. It's the way Tyrese Halliburton plays.
Yeah.
But I also don't see why that can't translate to the playoffs if they choose to play that way. The Bucks are a bad transition defense team. They rank in the lowest part of the league in that. They've improved since the Doc Rivers switch up, but they're still weak at it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the Pacers were able to exploit them so much, because they play the specific way that the Bucks can't defend.
Yeah.
Without Giannis on the court, the Pacers should be able to play their normal style of ball. With Giannis, that it changes a lot, and I'm not sure how to speculate on that. But as long as Giannis is injured, they have a legitimate chance to win this series. I think when the big guy comes back, I think any chance of that goes out the window.
Yeah.
But... The question is, can they get up, like, say if they win the next few games. Say they take one on the road. They aren't expected to win game one on the road. That's just never an expectation in a series. Say they win the next game, and they go home, 1-1. Win one of those. Even win both. They could win both at home. I could totally see that happening.
Mm-hmm.
What if Dame has a bad shooting night? He had a great one the other night, but he's been inconsistent all season.
We've seen this Bucks team collapse before.
Yeah, Pat Bev looked really good, though.
Yeah.
And to me, seeing a guy like Pat Bev really playing hard, that's a good sign for
Pat
a team.
Bev.
He's a soul of any team he's on.
Yeah.
He knows it. The fans know it. Doc Rivers knows it. He's been with Pat Bev twice before.
I think what's interesting about this series and the way these two teams match up, the pieces are pretty live or die by the three. We saw it yesterday. They shot 20% from the three. There's always the question in the NBA of is it one night? Is it one night where you shoot 20%, or is this going to stand for the rest of the series? With a team that's got a three-point shooter like Halliburton, I don't think this is going to happen again. I think it can happen again. That's just the matter of live or die by the three. But also, the Bucks are one of the best. They are seventh in the league in opponent three-point percentage. In their last three games, they're holding opponents to under 30%, which puts them at fourth in the league. These two teams are almost polar opposites of each other. And you're seeing a team, the Pacers, who have someone in the paint that can defend the paint. I don't know. I want to see this Pacers team play like they did in the regular season in a playoff setting, because it's fun basketball and they're talented.
Yeah. I honestly wonder if that style of play, the way that they play in the regular season, isn't suited to the playoffs, mainly because when defenders really lock in, the space that they normally work with, the lapses defensively that they can exploit, the quickness, like, people are going to get back on defense in a way that they won't in the regular season. When you're dealing with a guy like you're Halliburton and you're dribbling up the court and Pat Bev is harassing you the entire way, that changes the dynamic. Is Pat Bev going to give that type of defense in the regular season? Sometimes, but he's not going to do it the whole game.
He's just a playoff player.
Exactly. Like, playoff players come out of the woodworks
playoff
in the playoffs. Playoff Pat. Maybe we need to have that conversation.
Yeah.
But it's not reasonable to expect them to play their normal, like, timbre basketball.
No. I want them to win another game. I want them to win game two. So I want this series to be pushed a bit. I want the Bucks to be tested.
They need it.
Yeah, they do. I don't want them to be trotting through the playoffs, no pun intended with the Bucks thing, but I don't want them to be just pushing their way into the conference finals. I need them to be tested, because I don't like when Giannis can just walk through the NBA. I don't know. And I on the other hand, I don't like the Doc Rivers slander completely, just because I think he's still a credited NBA coach, mm-hmm. by all means. Chris Middleton looked sick last night.
He looked normal.
Yeah,
in a way that he hasn't in the whole season.
He looked like the Chris Middleton that they had in that playoff series where they won the chip. I'm curious of who the Bucks would play if they win this series.
Wouldn't they play the winner of the Cavs series?
Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know. I don't have the bracket seared into my brain.
What do we think about a Pat Bev, Jalen Brunson matchup? You eat that up.
Eating that
up.
I'll get my popcorn bucket out.
Who's winning that? Because I don't know. I feel like Jalen Brunson's a pretty mellow dude. Like, you don't see him, like...
Wait, they would play the winner of the Knicks series?
No, I don't know if they would, but I'm saying, like, down the line, that matchup could happen. But I think Pat Bev could bring out a side in Jalen Brunson that we haven't seen. Like, just like an absolute tank engine, just trying to steamroll a player, just taking over an offense, and defeating a guy that likes the challenge and likes the competitive, likes having the competitive edge.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. They would play the winner of the Knicks-Sixers series.
Okay, that's a fun series.
Do you want to go through some hypotheticals here? You get the Cavs, or you get the Knicks. The Knicks, I think, are going to win that series.
Lucas saying the Bucks would play the Knicks-Sixers winner. Yeah. Okay. Keep going with what you were saying.
Yeah. Say that I'm going to assume the Knicks are going to win, just because they're the staple team.
Okay.
I don't think that the Sixers have enough in the tank to get out of the first round, unfortunately. Not with Embiid injured like he is. So say, I think it's going to be a Knicks-Bucks second round. In that series,
who are you taking?
I'm going to take the Bucks in that series. I don't think that a healthy, or even a healthy adjacent Bucks team, has any right to lose to that Knicks team.
Yeah.
As good as the Knicks are, as good as Tibbs is, as good as Jalen Brunson is, like, At the beginning of the season when that Dame trade was made, we looked at this Bucks team and said they're going to win the chip or be in the finals. Anything short of the finals for them is a complete disaster. They're operating on a quick timeline. They got to win right now. Mm. They can't lose. And I think that they have the ability to make the finals. They could beat the Celtics in the conference finals. Yeah, they're the only team in the East that has that ability. I don't think that they should be losing to the Knicks.
What do you think the Knicks are missing? What do they need to make a conference final, to make an NBA finals?
They need a second star that can take burden off of Brunson's shoulders.
I think so. They need someone who can score 30 a night and get themselves their own butt. They need like a slasher almost. I think.
Ananobi's not that guy for them.
No.
DiVincenzo is good, but he's not that guy.
I think this offense...
Randall is certainly not that guy. And no, I know that he's injured right now.
But
he's just not that good. They need a new guy. They need to draft a center. They need to really find someone for
it. It's an offense that looks like can go stale at any given moment against a good defense. I can just see, like, if this offense slows down, they start missing shots, I can just see a team just making it look ugly.
I mean, because you're relying on, like, well, LeBron said this. He called Brunson a one-headed snake, I think.
Uh-huh.
A one-headed horse, some animal that LeBron chose.
Yeah.
This is during the J.J. Redick interview. And I really thought about it, and I was like, yeah, LeBron knows that that's the weakness of this team.
Yeah.
You can send an extra defender at Brunson.
Anyone in the league knows, LeBron knows, like,
You can send an extra defender at Brunson, mess their entire offensive flow up. You live with DiVincenzo taking 10 or 15 threes in a game if need be. That's so fine.
Yeah.
Make DiVincenzo or Josh Hart beat you.
What happens if McBride is averaging 20 points a game for a series?
That's a bridge you have to cross.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I think that's a bridge that you rely on not needing to cross either.
Let's call it an unstable bridge.
We're getting a text from Luca here saying if the Knicks had Randall, they'd beat the Celtics.
Luca, I know you're one of those Knicks fans that would complain about Randall when he was doing his bummy stuff that he always does in the playoffs. Like, I feel like I've heard this from your mouth. I know I've heard it from Xander's mouth. Knicks fans love talking about Randall until he's on the court, in which case they wish he was off the court. That's all I'm going to say.
Fair enough.
I'm not a Randall hater. I'm just realistic about his offensive limitations, his defensive limitations, his limitations.
Yeah.
He's a limited guy. He's not the best. You can't be beating a team like the Sixers or the Bucks with Julius Randle.
Yeah.
Bah, I hate being a hater, but I am one. I'm such a hater. Let's talk about the Timberwolves. We haven't talked about them
yes.
yet.
I forgot they existed. That series is cool because it's, you know, Ant breaking out into this playoff scene. We had Matthew Tenzer, airball
associate.
He was calling this. He said, I think Ant is just going to go off. I think Ant is going to take over. And that Ant and KD beef is sick. Ant looks like a freak.
Yep.
This Gobert is going to be defensive player of the year. I think the Suns just, we're seeing like the reality of the Suns this year is that they're just like not a team you can rely on despite their big three and a half if you count Nurkic. I don't know. I wasn't expecting this from the Timberwolves. I thought that they would get outclassed by a team with playoff experience. But here we are.
I wouldn't call the Suns a team with playoff experience.
True. A team with players that have playoff experience. Mm-hmm. Here we are, though. They absolutely tore apart the Suns, and they look as dominant as the team that they were in the regular season. And Ant looks like the same player he was all year. This team looks like if they play like this, they can go far.
Okay, real quick, I've got a PSA to read. Playoff basketball, nothing brings up the topic of cryptocurrency more than anything than the Coinbase ads that are plastered all over the NBA courts virtually.
Crypto.
So I'm going to talk about the numbers to think about with Bitcoin energy costs. Let me head this over here. A single Bitcoin transaction consumes 2,131 kilowatts of energy, which is enough to power the average U.S. household for 73 days. Comparing its climate effects with other forms of electronic payment, a single Bitcoin transaction creates the carbon of 2,634,835 Visa transactions. A single Bitcoin transaction also generates 358 grams of electronic waste, which is equivalent to the weight of more than two iPhone 12s. Clearly, this ad was written in 2020.
There you go.
Also, prior to the Bitcoin bubble bursting into a million pieces and showering us with metal scraps that dig into our skin. Numbers to think about from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio. There's a little note written on here from, I guess, a fellow DJ. To recap, Crypto Boys, you suck. You're killing the planet. All the statistics were sourced from thedigiteconomist.com.
Anyways.
I love cryptocurrency. I love some speculative technologies. I get up in the morning for those.
Oh, absolutely. I have a on-the-spot opinion for it. I need to hear, who do you have going out of the West?
Nuggets.
That quick.
Lazy take, but it's the right take.
I think it's the right take. Is there a team that could actually pose a legitimate threat?
The Lakers. I want to talk about the
Nuggets.
Series.
If the Nuggets win this series, are they steamrolling the rest of the playoffs? Until the finals?
No one in the West matches up with them. Maybe the Timberwolves. That's a conversation that I'm not willing to have yet. Let's see how this first series goes.
And I want to say the Clippers as well.
I don't think that's them. I don't think that the Clippers match up well enough with them, unfortunately. Yeah. We were talking like the Warriors or even the Celtics, the Clippers match up really good with them. The Nuggets are a unique beast.
Yes.
I think that the Timberwolves question of them being able to really compete with the Nuggets is the most interesting one. Last year, the Timberwolves were the only team to take a game off the Nuggets on their home court.
The Nuggets
swept the Lakers and they didn't sweep the Timberwolves.
If the Timberwolves defend like they did yesterday and their offense is hot, they're a final team, which I don't think I've given them enough respect this year. But
yeah,
Ant has the ability to take that team far.
What if, like, we could be sitting here in July and realizing that Anthony Edwards is the second coming of Jesus?
Theoretically. We could be realizing that he's going to change sports and he's going to be Aaron Judge in the MLB a month later. Who knows? He might change his name to Edward of Anthony.
Something that Chuck, our summer resident, would love. He's like, Anthony Edwards?
Yes.
He could court my daughter. No, but...
I don't know. This Timberwolves team is sick. They're crazy at home, and they've had the Nuggets this year, I think.
I mean, we talk about that one. I want to dwell on that moment. I think the Timberwolves are going to beat the Suns. Maybe they won't, but I think it's very likely that they'll beat the Suns.
I like it.
When would they get the Nuggets? Would they get them in the second round? No, Nuggets are the 2 seed. They would get them in the conference finals.
That's a great series.
No. They would get them in the second round. Okay, the Timberwolves are the 3 seed, so they would get the Nuggets in the second round That's a real
Thunder
series.
Pelicans, the winner of that plays the Clippers series, and then Suns series plays Lakers series.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's going to be interesting.
The West is deep, man.
That's crazy. I think that the Mavs are going to beat the Clippers. Oh, my God. Luka requests some Naz Reid.
I love Naz Reid.
Okay, let's talk about Naz Reid.
I love Naz Reid. X Factor.
Who is more important to the Timberwolves? Kat or Naz Reid?
Oh, my God.
That's a
great question. Because
I think it's Kat, but like very close to Naz Reid.
When Kat is injured, Naz Reid can fill that role a bit.
Naz Reid is injured. Can Kat fill that role?
Oh, wow. Ooh. Oh, my God. I don't think so, because Naz Reid off the bench is such a force. I mean,
who is a member of Jelly Fam?
Who? Naz.
Naz Reid was the member of Jelly Fam. Was Kat a member of Jelly Fam? No, he's not drippy enough.
I can't imagine Kat yelling filet when he goes up for
layup. No.
No chance. No chance.
Is his name Naz? We played Naz at the beginning of this show. Different spelling, but the same energy.
Naz.
We don't listen to Kat Stevens. No. We listen to Naz. Hate me now.
I'm a Naz Reid fan. Naz Reid supporter. He kills the Warriors. I think he's an elite backup center.
Backup forward.
Yeah, anything you want him to be.
There's some point what you said. You said Naz Reid supporter. He kills the Warriors. Can I extend this? He breaks down doors. I don't want to do that right now. Not live.
Maybe an X factor in this series. I think Jaden McDaniels is an X factor, the same extent that Naz Reid is. I love the Naz Reid praise. I don't think he gets enough of it. And I don't think that this team gives their depth enough credit, because they're deeper than people realize. Nas is a crazy option off the bench. Conley, obviously. Jaden McDaniels is going to bring defense. Even, dare I say, Monte Morris, but I don't know if we can get there yet. But anyways, this team's...
getting out there with the extra Nuggets revenge. If you want to beat a team, you got to get a guy who's technically betrayed by that team.
Exactly.
Get that extra hatred.
Exactly.
Let him talk shit about, like... Let him speak negatively about the Nuggets in the locker room, and then get them going off. You know?
I don't know. I like the Timberwolves. Who's their coach? Am I forgetting this? Chris Finch.
Chris Finch.
Here we go.
The Finchster.
He's up for what do you call it? For Coach of the Year.
Man, him, Mark Daigneault.
I think it has to be Mark Daigneault, but shout out Chris Finch, because he's created a three-headed monster in Minnesota, a state that is not really a basketball state.
It's a hockey state.
Yeah.
Football state. It's just a state, to be honest. Shout out
the mid-market teams, though, because they're on the rise, which this league needs, because when the teams are... concentrated in LA, San Francisco, New York, and Boston, and we haven't seen Chicago in a while.
Yeah.
I think the league gets repetitive and it loses a lot of fire. Obviously, like the average NBA fan doesn't want to see a team like the Timberwolves win, but it's so good for the league to have these mid-market teams like competing with these huge cities with a lot of money. Like the Pelicans. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? That's New Orleans. Has the potential to be a basketball city, I think, and they just haven't had that yet.
Something I find interesting is this tension between small and big market teams in the NBA, and it's a unique problem to the NBA due to the way that free agency affects player movement and affects roster building.
Exactly.
In the NBA, you can either build, you can buy a team, or you can grow a team.
Yeah.
Small market teams are basically required to grow their teams, and in a way, that not being able to buy a team through free agency is a blessing for many teams. The Thunder have to be conservative in the way that they trade their draft capital. They've accumulated it because they know that they can't get free agents. At least not in the sense of... like, they can get free agents, but they can't get blockbuster free agents.
The pull of a California team, of a New York team...
Miami team.
Of a Miami... Yeah, great.
Big market teams that... like, you grow young players, you get them on their rookie deals, you get a ton of young talent, maybe you make one or two moves to put you over the top. Boom. That's what Milwaukee did. One move, that Drew Holiday move, they traded for him. That's all they needed. That was all homegrown talent. But then you get a team like the Lakers, and that's another viable path to contention. The Warriors, what they do.
Yeah.
The Warriors home... But then when you combine a homegrown team with a big market, that's when you get the Warriors. You get something really dangerous. You get the free agency combination plus the cheap deals that you're already on and the player loyalty. That's dynasty.
Obviously,
right,
there's a lot that goes into what brings a player to a team. You're looking at the coaching staff, just the quality of life, I mean, how the franchise is going to treat you. But like, in essence, like that city you're going to spend the next few years, year at minimum, is really what pulls you. Like, do you want to spend the next few years playing ball in Portland? Like, if you're like a big free agent star, and you're looking to pair with another star, you want to be in Miami, you want to be in LA. I think the Nuggets are emerging as a team that is built on what you said, on draft capital and draft picks and building for themselves. They're built on Nuggets players. But if you have a star like Jokic, that's when a mid-market team gets to bring in these big free agency names.
I mean, then you have imagine like a spectrum of like Thunder to Lakers. The Lakers being a team that sacrificed all of their young talent, which was never a long-term investment anyways. They had no intention of letting those guys develop. They were just drafted enough to get LeBron.
The Lakers want to challenge every single year.
And they can. They're in a unique position to do so. But then you get a team like the Thunder. You can't bring in free agents. You have to grow your own talent,
build your own
and they're
team.
Better off. They jumped ship at the perfect point. They've gone through two cycles of draft, grow, release. They're going to release all these dudes when they need to.
Within the last 6 years, we have seen six completely different Thunder teams.
Mm-hmm.
You've got that Chris Paul era. Obviously, you have the KD, Russ era. You've got the Melo era, the PG era. I mean, there's overlap within all of them. But that's a team that has clung on, stayed a bit competitive for a while, just taking in the draft picks. You know, they had one crappy year from what I remember. And it takes 1 year and then you're back if you're managed well enough. Kudos to the Thunder GM. I don't know who it is, but
Presti,
yeah. But that's a team that has... This is a project that has been going on for years in the same sense that the 76ers process was going on for years as well.
Yeah, but and it looks really good when you draft well. That's what I'm starting to realize. Drafting is everything. If you draft well, you don't have to make these terrible decisions where you're mortgaging your future. Future comes. The future comes and it arrives and it grows with your team. Get your team on one timeline.
It's hard to draft well. The Thunder make you look easy. And I wish I knew what the Thunder's formula for a draft pick was, because they seem to hit every single time, apart from maybe with Pokusevski.
But they draft... The way the Thunder draft is quite different than other teams.
It's true.
The Thunder like to draft project players that might develop. They're always swinging for the fences. And then when they do inevitably hit, it's huge for them.
They draft character as well. I think that they've built a team not only on talent but also on personality, and that goes a long way. I mean, it looks like a team where people would take a pay cut to stick together because they're a unit. They're a family. I mean, top of the West.
Top of the West. It's beautiful. Last year they didn't even make the playoffs. They lost to someone in the play-in, maybe the Kings. I don't know. But the Kings were the 3 seed.
But it wasn't like last year people were saying, "Ah, this Thunder team, they're screwed." People were like, "Watch out for them next year because you can see something's budding." I don't know if anyone expected them to be this good, but I think over the last 2-3 years since that Chris Paul Shea pairing, you can see that it's just a straight upwards trajectory.
Progression.
Yeah, and I think that. Chris Paul, having spent time with Shea, says...
Huge.
Yeah, you can see it in Shea.
I mean, it was really... The presence of Chet and J-Dub taking that leap. Because last year, Shea took his leap.
Yeah.
Shea hasn't... He's improved this year, but not by that much. Shea is Shea now. Yeah. He's in his prime. But then you add two potential superstars to that mix. This is a real team. They're gonna be coming for people in a few years. I think this year, they're not where they need to be. And the other... Let's say that they're waxing currently.
I like that.
The Thunder are waxing, but they haven't hit their full moon yet.
Yeah.
A lot of teams are already there. The Clippers are, like, probably going to start waning. They're like a waning gibbous right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Who else is waxing and waning?
I want to say the Rockets are waxing.
Rockets are waxing. Spurs are just starting to wax. The Spurs are waxing.
The Timberwolves are an interesting one. Because... The Timberwolves have a weird mix of young talent, and
they're at their full moon, bro.
I think they're at their full moon as well,
which is kind of ironic. Oh, yeah. maybe that's a metaphor that needs to be explored more.
But they're at their full moon, which is unfortunate because I don't think that is Ant ready to win now. And he's good enough to win now. I don't think in his sense of his career arc, who knows? Ant's ready to win now. I'll say it, but. It's just can they do it? And then Chet. We're seeing rookie Chet. Mm-hmm. And rookie Chet is putting up some crazy numbers. And obviously J-Dub took that jump in the second year. We'll see if Chet can do that as well.
But anyways, we're nearing the top of the hour, and I just want to hit the people with our outro song, which is the same as our intro song. This is Hate Me Now by Nas. Boom. Wait. Logistics are tough. Why is it not working? Basketball. Feeling one more moment of basketball. Bruh. Now I look foolish. Oh, it's Ox 2. That's the reason.
There's no turning back now.
Cheers. Have a good day.
Escobar season has returned.
It's been a long time. Been a long time coming. It's life or death for me, man. But you know, there's no turning back now. This is what makes me. This is what I am.
Feel me?
DJ